lower global growth. But should we really care all that much? In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. Markets look like they're getting off to a sad start today. It may be related to the IMF lowering its forecast for global growth, citing sluggishness in Europe. Jeffrey Cleveland is chief economist at Payden & Riegel. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning.
The IMF downgraded global growth this year by really just 0.2%. It's not huge. And they didn't say that there was anything majorly wrong with the U.S. economy. Is this really that alarming?
You know, not in my view. I don't think that is alarming. I mean, there's a joke that the use of decimal points by economists proves that they have a sense of humor. So, you know, on the margin, it's a little bit slower growth than it was expected in the fall. But, I mean, I think what probably is weighing most on markets is the list of risks to the future growth. So you have the tariff situation unresolved, Brexit unresolved, the kind of weakness that we've seen out of Germany and Italy. Will that linger? Will it become more pronounced? So it's the uncertainty listed in the report that perhaps is having the bigger effect than the actual number change.
Jeffrey Cleveland is chief economist with Payden and Riegel. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
France, or specifically the French Data Protection Authority, has fined Google the equivalent of $57 million for violating a new data privacy law adopted last year in Europe. This is the biggest fine yet under the rule known as GDPR. The BBC's technology correspondent, Rory Kethlen-Jones, has more on this. Hi, Rory.
Hi there.
So what was Google doing specifically that led to this fine?
People who use Google may get targeted ads based on data collected to personalize those ads. And the regulator is saying people were not sufficiently informed. Google hadn't obtained clear consent to process data. They said basically there was information that people were given, but it was spread across several different documents. And people have had to go through an awful lot of steps to actually understand what was going on. And that wasn't good enough.
It is. It's clearly a big fine and the biggest under the GDPR, the Europe's new privacy law. But it's not really that big if you compare it to other fines that have been imposed on Google from different European regulators. For example, over smartphone antitrust allegations, that there was one fine of $5 billion. You think Google's going to feel this one of just $57 million?
I mean, it'd have to be a huge fine for it to really rock Google. But I think it's the reputational damage that this does. These are very big fines compared with what was possible before this new law came in. The fines then were pretty paltry. So it's being touted as a record. And I think, you know, it will worry Google because they and other big technology companies looked at this new law, thought that they prepared for it years in advance, and it now appears they didn't prepare well enough.
Is there a basic incompatibility between Europe's new privacy laws and the basic business model of some of these large tech companies like Google? I mean, are they threatened in any material way by these laws?
A year or so ago, when this was being mooted, there was a big pushback, particularly from American companies, saying this will make it impossible for us to operate in Europe. The mood has changed because, frankly, of all the revelations about Facebook's data scandals. And companies are beginning to say we're going to have to work with this. And indeed, the European data law may turn out to be a template for others around the world, particularly in the United States.
Rory Kethlen-Jones is the BBC's technology correspondent. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
There is investing, and then there's what you might call moral investing. Maybe you don't want to invest in fossil fuels, or maybe you don't want your money to go into some country whose policies you disagree with. Well, the word for this is SRI, Sustainable, Responsible, and Impact Investing, and it has risen 38% in the past 2 years. A quarter of all U.S. investment falls into this category, according to the Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investment. Lisa Wall is CEO there and joins us. Good morning.
Thanks for having me today.
What are people's issues? What are they so concerned about that they are letting it direct their money?
The way that I think about sustainable investment is so many consumers look at what they buy and its impact on sweatshops and, you know, their efforts to recycle and buy hybrids and organics. It's all about how do you use your ability as a consumer to force companies to kind of adopt best practice. Investment is kind of the flip side of that coin. Hmm. It's another opportunity for retail investors and high net worth investors and institutional investors to use their investment dollars to address important environmental, social, and governance issues.
There must be a trade-off somehow, right? I mean, if you're doing anything that is not, you know, put my money where it will grow the fastest, by definition, there must be a trade-off.
Well, there really isn't. You know, at any given moment, all investors have to use some due diligence. And what we found and what data has found is that looking at risks actually helps make a better investment because you're looking at getting rid of practices and policies that could put a company in danger. Just think about Volkswagen and their emission settlement, which I just had to sell my car back. You know, that's a major governance risk right there, right? If an investor had known about that, they probably would have thought differently about investing in Volkswagen.
Is there any evidence that this kind of pressure causes companies to change their behavior if it's on a particular issue like climate or, you know, get more green or some, or would a political actor change its behavior?
Absolutely. We did a report several years ago called The Impact of Sustainable and Responsible Investment. There's an entire chapter on how shareholder engagement has changed the way companies do business, because the reality is you can bring a successful proposal, but what you want to be able to do is 2 or 3 years out, see how policies have changed. And so on issues like say on executive pay, diversity, trying to put more women on boards, we've seen big changes in companies. And we think it's been an incredibly important way to influence companies and management to be better actors.
Lisa Wall, CEO of USCIF, the Forum for Sustainable and Responsible Investment. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.